Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One, experts have embarrassed themselves. Experts have become a joke. From the pandemic, to the economy, to the climate, no one has done more reputational damage to themselves than experts. So is it smart for Donald Trump to rely on two experts in New York? Two, the most important job in a functioning society, the most important job in culture, mother, that, plus nicotine, hormone replacement therapy, HGH, menopause, enhancement, and Ozempic with Dr. Nicole Sapphire. And three, can a Zoomer answer these questions? A pop culture quiz for Young Establishment James. It is the Will Cain Show. Streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, on the Fox News Facebook page, and always on demand by subscribing at Apple or Spotify, or subscribing right here underneath this live stream on YouTube and a text description. You'll see a button for The Will Cain Show to subscribe on YouTube, or you can go to youtube.com/@WillCainShow. Our audience is growing on all platforms. Approaching 100,000 an episode between Facebook, YouTube, podcast, and foxnews.com. But numbers aren't what this show is about. I've never wanted to have a show where we talk at you, where we just go for ratings. I wanted to have a community. I wanted to have a show where we talk with you. So the point of me saying subscribe at Apple or Spotify or on YouTube is for you to join our community. You can participate in a two-way conversation in the comment section. You can always leave a comment on whatever your podcast platform is. You can leave a review. You can leave a comment on Facebook, or you can leave a comment on YouTube, and you can interact with other listeners of The Will Cain Show. I mean it, and I intend to make this show unique and authentic within this ecosystem, that I don't want to just lodge another one-way conversation over the world of politics. We talk about sports. We talk about culture. We actually talk about things that are important to America, to Western civilization. But I don't think it's just the content that will make us unique. I think it's you who will make us unique. And I want this to be an authentic community. So by subscribing, you can join that conversation. I want to bring in 2-A-Day's Dan, Young Establishment James, and Tinfoil Pat, if I can, for just a moment. The Phoenix Coyotes NHL team is moving to Utah. And this morning, they have published a list of the 20 names that are the finalists of what that team will be called. Here's your finalists. It is the Utah Frost, Utah Ice, the Powder, Mountaineers, Freeze, Mammoth, the Utah Black Diamonds, the Blast, the Caribou, the Blizzard, the Swarm, Utah Hive, Utah Outlaws, Yeti, Squall, Fury, Glaciers, Canyons, Venom, and HC. HC would be the Utah Hockey Club. Now, first of all, several of these names lean into one of my not just theories about sports, but theories about culture. I love regionalism. I love provincialism. I love bold flavors. Like yesterday when we broke down the different styles of barbecue between Texas and Carolina and Kansas City with the McLemore boys, I like that brisket is done or was done a certain way in Texas, and that sausage is an essential component to a barbecue plate. Whereas in the Carolinas, it's all about pulled pork. I love the accent in Boston, and I don't want it to sound like the accent in Georgia. I don't want one big monolithic monoculture, refined boringness of not just America, but for the world. I like how we differ. I think it makes the world more interesting, more fun. And that's reflected for me in sports. I want to hear a team name like the Texas Longhorns. You know, I don't want to hear a team name like the Los Angeles Kings. I don't want the generic Tennessee Titans. I want the unique and provincial Houston Oilers. I like the West Virginia Mountaineers. More than, forgive me, the Georgia Bulldogs or the Auburn Tigers. Be who you are. Be authentic. So when I look at Utah, I have one in particular I think that stands out for me. But I'm just curious for you guys. Let's go to Tinfoil Pat because he has big opinions on fashion, uniforms, alt-right haircuts, and so forth. So I would just figure he'd have a big, strong opinion on what should be the name of the Phoenix Coyotes when they move to Utah.
I mean, most of the names on this list are garbage, but very like minor league. But I would go with something that's regional and something that is in the vein of the Jazz, where it's not plural. So I would lean toward the Hive or toward the Yeti.
All right. First of all, Jazz makes no sense. That was a New Orleans-based team that moved to Utah. Like, you do not think Jazz when you think Utah. And yes, there was a trend, and I will give you this. I hated the generic USFL trend in NFL uniforms. There was a trend, though, in team names, I think in the 2000s, roughly, where they started to go to the non-plural, like the Minnesota Wild. And I actually like that name. I like Minnesota Wild. So I'm not averse to it, but it's just more important that it be, you know, tied to the regionalism of it. Young Establishment James, Two Days, what do you like?
I like the Caribou.
Utah Caribou. Okay. Two Days?
The one that stuck out to me is Mammoths. I don't know why. I just like the Mammoths. I think it would work.
Well, I think you have something going for you over at least Young Establishment James and myself. So my runaway favorite is the Yeti, the Utah Yeti. It just sounds awesome. Now, the problem on my provincialism idea, the unique regionalism, is, James, there aren't caribou in Utah. Like, caribou are a Canadian cold weather animal. I think my inner meat eater is right on that. But I don't even know if there's Yeti sightings in Utah. I think of Yeti as, like, again, Alaska, Upper Canada. So I might be betraying myself with Yeti. Hive, Tinfoil, there must be something with bees in Utah that I'm just not completely aware of. So yeah, I'm guessing that's what that's about. But I'll tell you, I mean, I do not want to see this come back. I guess the venom is tied to the rattlesnake or some type of poisonous snake that's probably common to the mountains and deserts. Canyons set yourself up for way too many jokes. The glaciers, which I like, it's slow, but that probably, like, you're going to get a lot of, wow, they really skate like glaciers. But I like it. It's probably second for me. Fury sounds just generic. Mm-hmm. Squall. Outlaws. Now, you know how I'm into outlaws and Western frontiersmen. And Utah has a long history of being, you know, hideouts for Western outlaws. So that's it's kind of cool, but I don't think people will know that, and they'll think it's generic. Swarm is kind of back to the bees thing. Blizzard, a little generic. Blast. Black Diamonds, I almost want that just because I'm ready for the whole Twitter debate about the X debate about whether or not it's racist. I don't know if you're allowed to have black diamonds anymore. Well, we all know, James. You don't have to clarify.
Well,
being
white
isn't the point.
He's just checking boxes for us. That's
why
fine.
Can't they be white diamonds? Why they got to be black diamonds? Mammoth, Freeze, the Mountaineers is kind of cool. Little piggybacking off West Virginia. Powder sounds soft. You're a joke. Frost and ice. All right, just a little bit.
Too many cocaine references.
Your sport is cold. So, a lot of drug references there. The good thing this is the NHL, not as many problems as other sports with with cocaine busts in the NHL. Not that they're exempt, but I lean heavily towards the Utah Yeti. Let me know what you think. You can drop it in the comments. You can hit me on social media at Will Cain. See Will Cain on Instagram, or again in those Facebook and YouTube comments. Which do you like for Utah, and why? Do you share my opinion? You need to be authentic, be real to who you are. Drop refinement culture. Drop the monoculture. Don't play Taylor Swift at intermission. Play something unique to Utah, you know, like jazz. All right, story number one. Nobody's had a harder run of it than experts. Nobody has more beclowned themselves than experts. So is it smart for Donald Trump to rely on two experts in New York? Here's what I mean. The team for Donald Trump's defense in the New York case with Alvin Bragg made a concerted and real effort, an acknowledged decision that when they impaneled their jury, they put on that jury two attorneys, two lawyers. It's something that no lawyers want to do, not sit on a jury, but put another lawyer on the jury. Why? Because they become super jurors. They become the expert of that jury, and everyone else follows their lead. They're presumed to know more than the average juror. I'm talking about in the minds of their fellow jurors. As we realize, and I think it's become increasingly clear in a conversation we've had on a continuing basis here on The Will Cain Show, people make emotional decisions. I think the team for Donald Trump made a calculated gamble, and one that I don't think is necessarily a bad gamble, but no doubt a gamble, to say, I'm going to put two lawyers on here to see if they can allow their supposed knowledge and fidelity to the law to overcome their emotion. The emotion being their presumptive hatred of Donald Trump. Trial in New York, 83% votes for Joe Biden, overwhelmingly liberal. You're going to get 12 people that hate Donald Trump. People make emotional decisions. And that's what the testimony of Stormy Daniels was all about. Play into emotions. Throw dirt, slime, make it ugly, talk about sex, talk about positions, prejudice the jury, prejudiced and already prejudiced jury against Donald Trump. And the bank shot is, let's hope two experts can overcome their emotion to understand the charges make no sense and the testimony of Stormy Daniels has no relevance to the guilt of Donald Trump. The problem is experts are a joke. Experts have tripped all over themselves, most obviously over the past 5 years. Experts have ruined their own reputation. Bill Maher did an awesome thing on this on Real Time this past weekend, where he went through the decisions that drove us through the pandemic, all by at least self-styled, in some cases government-sanctioned, experts. We walked up and down grocery aisles with arrows pointing in different directions. We went to ATMs with boxes where we couldn't stand too close to the guy in front of us, but we could stand right next to the guy at the next ATM because, you know, COVID has no lateral movement. You know, it has no hops, can't go over one of these, you know, plastic barriers. It only has linear motion like an alligator. It can only go forward and backwards. It's got no leaps. Side to side. I mean, COVID, they told us to, as Bill Maher pointed out, play baseball in front of cardboard cutouts. Remember, look at this videos and pictures of guys playing a full-on Major League Baseball game, and it's little cardboard cutouts of fans in the stands. Experts dismissed natural immunity. Experts told us to turn ourselves into life-size condoms, covered up in plastic and wearing stupid masks outside. Experts told us not to get fresh air. Again, in the words of Bill Maher, the experts closed the ocean. These are the experts of our world. And there's really no bigger expert who's beclowned themselves over a much longer period than 5 years than the voodoo scientists, also known as economists. Economists don't know what's going to happen. They have a worse prediction record than the weatherman. And by the way, that's another set of experts who have beclowned themselves, climate experts. But Joe Biden this week sat down shockingly for an interview with Aaron Burnett of CNN, and they went over the economy. And Biden said things like, well, when he came into the Oval Office, there was a 9% inflation rate. False. Biden said things like polls showing there's extreme levels of concern of consumer confidence, or that real income is down. He was dismissive of them and said they were wrong. And he'll spin various stats and tell you that a Snickers bar has suffered from shrinkflation, not because of inflation, but because of corporate greed, which we're going to address. And no doubt, there will be self-styled experts. There'll be voodoo scientists. There will be economists that publish numbers or back up Joe Biden. Because there is no bigger group who has lost the trust of the public than the expert. So it's quite a gamble. It's quite a bank shot. It might be a gamble that I think I would take as well. Let me see if I can find two experts, the lawyers that sit on a jury, who will set aside their emotion to find reason, to find logic, and justice in the law. But if he does that, if the team does that, uses experts to guide us away from emotion, toward independent thinking, and toward justice, that will be a huge turn in the tides over the last past half decade for experts. The most important job in America, mother, plus Ozempic, nicotine, hormone replacement therapy, testosterone, all with Dr. Nicole Sapphire next on The Will Cain Show.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As much as I love unique sports names and regionalism, that same idea is about to allow me to offend several of the members of the Will Cain Show. That comes up in just a moment. Maybe an internal fight here between me and the Willitia. On the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News Facebook page. Hit subscribe, Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube, and join the community. She is a Fox News contributor. She is also the author of a brand new book, Love Mom, Inspiring Stories Celebrating Motherhood. Just here we are 3 days before Mother's Day. She is Dr. Nicole Sapphire. Hey, doctor, how are you today?
Great, Will. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited to have you on. I have a lot of things that I normally talk to you about off camera that I'm going to use this opportunity to explore all of my curiosity that I think is shared by my audience and talk to you about Ozempic and nicotine and steroids and HGH. But I'm going to talk to you first about this book. What made you want to write this book about motherhood?
So I'm going to go back actually to the last topic because I'm from Arizona and I remember when the Phoenix Coyotes actually became, and I'm a little upset that they're moving and changing the name. I think they need to keep the Coyote name. So I just needed to weigh in on that because I'm a native Arizonan.
Well,
and now
I will say, I think that was a great name, by the way.
It's great.
Really quick, before you go to the book, Phoenix Coyotes is a great name. Like, Coyotes is that was a great choice. The problem for you guys in Arizona is, I guess, it just wasn't supported in the way they needed for Arizona. So now they're about to become the Utah Mammoths.
Well, I did not realize hockey was such a big deal until I moved to the East Coast. Let me tell you, it has not taken foot in Arizona. That's unfortunate. And Coyotes was a great name because we had coyotes in our yard every single day. So it made sense. So now that I'm in the East Coast, Fox News medical contributor, and I was asked to write about my non-traditional motherhood journey. And it was such, I have been internally grateful that I was able to share my own story. You know, I usually talk about and write about healthcare policy and ways to be healthier physically and mentally. So the fact that I have been able to kind of share my journey, for those that don't know, I got pregnant when I was still in high school. It was obviously a very pivotal moment in my life. But for me, When I made the decision to have my child, to be that pregnant teenager walking around the halls of high school, you know, it didn't define me. It just was another moment in my life. And it helped carve who I am today. And that's kind of the message I wanted to get out in this book is, you know, when something unplanned happens or an obstacle comes in your way, it shouldn't stop you from what you're wanting to do with your life. Really, you can create a path around it and still do whatever it is you want to do. And that's why this putting this book together was incredibly important. It's really inspirational for people going through a hard time, for people who, you know, who maybe aren't feeling like, you know, they're doing everything perfect. You know, I think that reading not only my story, but so many of the other stories in the book kind of helps people realize that we're all on this journey together.
I love that you've decided to share your story. You shared it with me a few, I'd say months ago now. I think you shared it with me during a commercial break when you were guest hosting for Rachel Campos Duffy, which I did not know about your story. And here's what's, so, you know, you're so put together, you know, you're so smart, you're so accomplished. And I think motherhood, look, I'm going to get more into this with you in just a moment, but I think motherhood is the most important job in any successful functioning society. But so it's also a blessing. I mean, like it's a spiritual blessing to both individuals, or to more than just the mother and the child, to the father as well. It should be, and it is. That being said, like teen pregnancy, statistically, as well, I know you well know, we've shown it's a huge hurdle, as you described it, like at a minimum. I mean, sometimes I think the word hurdle could actually even soften what it does statistically in society. Like, you know, I think it is, you know, having children out of wedlock is like one of the biggest correlating factors to rates of poverty. And, you know, we tell our kids, you know, hey, don't do this because it could ruin your life. That's what we tell them, you know, because I don't know, it interferes with career goals, but not just that, college goals. You automatically become somebody with way more responsibility than doing what you need to perfect or improve yourself. All of this is introduced. So because of that backdrop, Dr. Sapphire, because all those stats are true, I think your story becomes even more impactful because you overcame all of those stats.
Well, you know, and there's a lot to unpack there, Will. So first of all, when you look at, you know, people who have children out of wedlock and, you know, there is a high rate of failure and when it comes to poverty and education, everything that you just described. And don't get me wrong, by no stretch of the imagination would I recommend to anyone, including my own three children, having a child while you're still in high school or not married, because it is more than a hurdle. It is a challenge and it is scary. But one thing that I see right now is there's a lot more support for those who are choosing the option other than choosing life. So if they find themselves with an unplanned pregnancy, maybe not married, maybe not having the financial support, there's a lot more external support to go and have an abortion or to go and give up the baby than for the person who actually wants to choose life. And so, well, again, I don't promote anybody to go out there and have these quote unquote unplanned pregnancies. I just wish that we had a much financial and emotional support for those who want to choose life as we do for the other choices. For me, choosing life was the right thing for me. I can't say that it is for everyone else, but this is my story. This is my journey. And I'm very grateful that I was able to lean on my faith, my family, a couple of friends. To be honest, most of my friends left me at the time. But by leaning on those around me, I was able to continue on. It was a very different journey. I was originally planned to go to the East Coast for college. I had, you know, other ideas of what I wanted to do. And while I still got to my ultimate professional goals, you know, my journey was just a little bit different, certainly more challenging. But I got there. And so what I want people to take home from all of this is if you find yourself in one of these situations, you have to lean on those around you. And you have to know that your life isn't over. You're going to work harder and you're going to spend the next few decades proving to everybody else wrong who's saying you can't do it. But you can get there. You just have to believe in yourself and lean mm-hmm. on those around you.
So, and by the way, I didn't mean to set all that up as some type of choice between life and abortion. It's usually the argument we have with our kids, not argument, but like the lesson we try to teach them for abstinence, right? Don't do this because here are the potential ramifications. But, you know, in your case, what I think is fascinating is, okay, but now it's happened. And what you talked a lot First of all, I know you a little bit. And so the idea that you would take this on as a challenge and be like, I'm going to prove people wrong is no surprise. I almost don't think there's a lesson to be learned there, because I think that's, in my estimation, probably part of your personality. Like you just were going to be that person regardless of what the challenge was. But you still said some things that I think they're interesting, because I like to look for, well, what can other people learn from this? And you talked a lot about the support. So what happened for you? Was it family was there for you at that time? You changed, you went to school locally. Like, what were literally, like, functionally, what were the things that happened in your life that made this doable?
Well, my entire senior year of high school, I was pregnant. Most of my friends stopped talking to me. I had to quit the cheerleading squad. And, you know, it was a very lonely time. I had my parents were there for me. And I had my teen Bible, which I kept by the side of my bed. And I still have it to this day, full of highlighting and little tabs. And it was there for a good reference. So I would go to school, I would go to work, and I would just be at home. It was a very isolating and lonely time. But I had the baby, and he was born 6 weeks before I graduated high school. He actually came to my high school graduation. My mom was holding him, the newborn, up in the stands, kind of showing for the world to see. And that was May. And then in August, I started college. I started locally at Arizona State University because I needed to be near my family. It didn't make sense that I was going to be able to fly somewhere and be a single mom with a newborn and go to college. And so while I worked 30 hours a week to help support myself, I had the baby, and I had my parents and my siblings. And that is really who stepped up to help me. We didn't have a lot of external support outside of that. My parents weren't necessarily high income earners, so I had to work as well. And we all band together, and these were my people. And when it came to going to medical school, you know, I talk about this a lot in the book. I didn't get straight A's during college. To be honest, I'm amazed I survived sometimes. It was a really tough time. I was breastfeeding. I was working. I was having a baby. And I even forgot to show up to one of my exams one day. And it was devastating. It was
hard. Wow, we have that dream, that nightmare. You lived that nightmare.
Yeah. And I go into the dirty details of it in the chapter a little bit. And ultimately, the medical schools I wanted to go to, you know, I wasn't that amazing of an applicant. I was average. I was an average applicant. I think I did great for the situation I was in. But I took a non-traditional route. And rather than going to the osteopathic schools that I was accepted to, I decided to go internationally to get the MD. Because the MD just meant so much to me. And so again, it was all, and I had to leave my son, and I had to be apart from my family for a little bit. And there was just so many emotions with it. But ultimately, I knew that, you know, you have to see long term. And so in the short term, there were some major sacrifices that we made as a family, that I made individually. But at the end of the road, it was all worth it. And people like to say that I'm privileged. Yeah. And the only way that I was able to do this is because of this privilege that I have been given. And the reality is, I am privileged, and I am living a privileged life, and I work damn hard for that privilege.
Yeah. And you have the privilege, I mean, I don't care what we call it, if it's privilege or not, of family. Like, that sounds like that was just integral to making it all work. Speaking of family, so the book is in time for Mother's Day. You can check it out. It's Love Mom, Inspiring Stories Celebrating Motherhood. And you talk to a bunch of Fox News moms. Nicole, I mean, I know my co-host Rachel Campos Duffy, who has 9 kids, is part of that. So, you know, I think one of the themes, and then, like, even your own life shows, there's not a formula. There's not one way to do it. And I'm sure that's what you took away from talking to all these different moms. I'm sure they all did it different ways, right? But I'm curious, did you find a commonality? Like, talking to all these moms, was there something that was shared by everyone?
Yeah, so we have a lot of Fox News moms in there, Rachel Campbell's Duffy's. We actually have Jennifer Hegseth, Pete's wife, Martha McCallum, Ainsley Earhart, Janice Dean, but also some non-Fox people that you've never heard of. One's a patient of mine who I gave a cancer diagnosis to when she had 3 young kids at home. One's a Gold Star mom who lost her son tragically after he came home from Afghanistan. And so each individual chapter is very different, but they all kind of come together with some very some very strong themes. One of them is faith, and it doesn't necessarily mean a traditional faith, but we all kind of had faith that we were being led by something greater than us. And by leaning in on that faith and trusting that there was a bigger plan for us, that does help us through some of those dark times. Also, overcoming obstacles, overcoming challenges, but really recognizing that you can't do it alone and there's no way to be a perfect mom. But as I quote in the book, there's a million ways to be a good one. And while we're kind of so busy with mom guilt and all these other things, at the end of the day, we're all doing great. And if you just read these stories, you realize we all have the same struggles. It's not like what you see on social media. Life is not picture perfect. There's no such thing as perfection. And if you're not taking care of yourself while you're also taking care of your family, you're not going to be any good for anybody. So self-care, lean in on your family, lean on your faith. Everything else is just noise. I mean, those are kind of pivotal message.
One more thing on this that I want to explore with you. So I said it several times, and I didn't say it as sort of like a touchy-feely cliche, the most important job in culture or the most important job in a functioning society, motherhood. I say it because I mean it, and here's what I mean. I think one of the most damaging things about modern feminism has been essentially the degradation of motherhood as a job. Now, what I mean by that is, I think it's fine for women to choose whatever it is their path in life, right? You're an accomplished doctor. There are several women who are high-level executives at Fox, right? But what I am talking about is noticing that if you're not those things, right? If you're not Dr. Nicole Sapphire, if you're not Suzanne Scott, that somehow you didn't do it. Like this idea that being a mother wasn't accomplishment, raising kids isn't an accomplishment in and of itself. And I think that that was kind of part of the feminist movement. Well, the way to be accomplished or successful is to do what the men have been doing and accomplish in that field. And I think it's a real problem in that I mean it. Like, I don't think there's a more important job than raising successful people. Like, that's like, I don't know what each of us gets to contribute to this world, Dr. Sapphire. I don't know how many people I get to help or touch or persuade or influence in my job. I don't know. But I know that my wife has much more influence on two than I do, the two that live in my house, right? And I have influence, but I'm saying she has the biggest job in that house. And she's impacting two people in a positive direction to be the next successful or positive members of America. And I just don't like this idea that that isn't like hugely noble. Like that is forget the word job. That is a life well spent. Like, I don't think there's any way, a more important way to spend a life than ensuring 1, 2, 4, 9, whatever it is, next people are good people. And that's mainly, not exclusively, but mainly the job of a mom.
Well, actually, I mentioned that. I think it's in the introduction of the book. I say we have, as mothers, the most important role that there ever is. It's to create and raise the next generation. I mean, the future of this world is actually in our hands. And that's another thing that a lot of the moms talk about. Yeah, we work really hard for our professional goals. You see a lot of people spend time and activity on their social stuff. But at the end of the day, it's raising these children, knowing that we are helping to influence the human beings that they're going to be and the future world. I mean, that there's nothing greater than that. And I completely agree with you that not only being a mother, being a woman is being stripped away from us as though it's insignificant. And we are created specifically to create new babies and raise them. I mean, physically and mentally, that is how we're programmed. And so to try and take that away from us is probably the most devastating thing I've seen.
Yeah. Well, again, it's Love Mom, inspiring stories celebrating motherhood. Now, I want to do this, if you wouldn't mind, for just a little bit, Dr. Sapphire. I want to just indulge a few of my own personal curiosities. Let's start, if you wouldn't mind. We'll start with men. Okay, so first of all, you said this to me like 2 weekends ago. You kind of said it in passing, and then we didn't talk about it. You said menopause is real. So like men, I don't know what age we're talking, late 40s, early 50s, mid-50s, go through what? What women go through in menopause?
Well, so Rachel and I were doing our regular Sunday wellness segment, and we're talking all things menopause, you know, for women. But I'm like, hey, by the way, let's not forget, men go through some changes too, and I'll refer to it as menopause. And it's true. I mean, Will, maybe you're not of age yet. You're still a young guy. But men do start having lower levels of their sex hormones, specifically testosterone, as they age, which is why it's harder for them to build muscle mass. And some other things, I'm not sure where we're at with the rating and the age appropriateness of this podcast, but there are some other changes that happen to
men
as
they
get older. You know, some of the sexual changes and the desires and the sleeping habits and kind of all those things, they do change. And a lot of it is attributed to decreasing testosterone as you age, which is why if you take external or you take testosterone supplements, especially people who are trying to build weight or put on muscle mass, you know, they're able to put on more muscle mass.
Okay, well, that's a perfect transition into another thing I wanted to explore. So I find myself becoming a little more, and I actually share this in common with Rachel Campos Duffy, I find myself becoming more, I don't know what the word would be, not homeopath, but like natural as I get older.
Oh,
and I'm super suspect
of
things.
Rachel and I are on a constant texting thread. She's like, is this safe? Is this safe? Is this safe?
Well, I just think okay, going through menopause is natural. Going through menopause is natural. It's what's supposed to happen. So I'm just kind of curious on your thoughts. Like, I mean, I actually don't know that I know some guys anecdotally who are doing, it's called, what do you call it? Where they do testosterone. They're doing testosterone to boost those levels like you talk about. What are your thoughts on that? Like, A, is that just steroids made popular? And B, like, I don't know. If I did that, aren't I pushing back on what my body kind of wants and needs to be doing anyway?
So the nouveau trend is for everyone to kind of get their hormones tested because, oh, if you're tired or you're feeling sluggish or you're having a more difficult time losing weight, it's probably your hormones. So take this medication. It'll be easier. I mean, that really just goes along to the whole instant gratification that we as Americans we live on. My book, Make America Healthy Again, is all about that. You know, we don't necessarily want to put in the hard work. I'm tired. I don't want to focus on sleeping more and eating healthier and exercising more. I want you to tell me my hormones are off. You give me a supplement and then I feel better. And that just is kind of the American way. Do I think that maybe we're overutilizing some of these supplements? Abso-frickin-lutely. I think it is natural that we change as we age. You know, as someone who tells people they have cancer every single day, I say to my kids, I say to my friends, growing older is a privilege. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to get my hair done and try and present myself as the best. But we have to remember that. And we have to know that there are all different seasons of life and things change. I personally am a huge supporter of like nutraceuticals, natural remedies. When I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, I was looking for anything I possibly can to naturally decrease systemic inflammation. You don't even know about this yet, but I actually have a line of nutraceuticals that I just don't publicly announce, but they're out there because of this very reason. And one actually is for men and women who, as they've gotten older, have kind of some of these decreased hormones. Maybe they're not having the same sexual drive or performance issues, you know, when they were able to have when they were younger. And by taking a lot of these natural substances, as long as they're pure and clean, no preservatives, I think that's the best way to go. Going and taking all of these intrinsic stuff, they comes with risk as well. For women, your hormone replacement therapies, they're increased risk of endometrial cancer, breast cancer, other things. Men, testosterone, increased risk of cardiac disease, atrial fibrillation, and some other things. So, you know, it's all benefits and risk. And, you know, we have to kind of get away from that. I want a quick fix for everything.
Well, the other one I want to ask you about on that same level of benefits and risks. So when I first joined ESPN, one of the first stories I worked for Outside the Lines, which is investigative journalism, long form stories and pieces. And one of the first ones I did, well, it doesn't matter on what story this was related to. It was about a swimmer. But it, completely independent of that, I was interviewing this I think it was a doctor in Florida. And he said this to me just in passing. He said, if you walk down the beach in South Beach, 90% of the guys there are on HGH. Just for vanity, not professional athletes. Just for vanity. So human growth hormone. And I've heard others say it's a wonder drug. Like, it's the fountain of youth. But it does, I mean, it's clearly got its problems, right? So from what I understand, the problem of HGH is it grows everything. It's a regenerative drug, and it will also grow cancer inside your body. Not from scratch, not from nothing, but if you have any small semblance of it, it makes it, it metastasizes it. It makes it a real. It makes it cancer.
So HGH, and not even just HGH. I mean, honestly, people were taking metformin, which is another diabetic medication. I mean, people are taking medications looking for this fountain of youth. And ultimately, what they're trying to do is decrease overall systemic inflammation and trying to get to more youthful hormone balance that, you know, we had decades earlier. And you're absolutely right. People who are on HGH and some of these other medications, they have a boost of energy. They are able to sleep better. Their skin feels better. You know, and they're building, when they're exercising, they're seeing weight come off, and they're also building muscle easier. There are also these great benefits to it. But as you're mentioning, there with benefits, there's always some risk. And when it comes to HGH specifically, and liver cancers, as well as other cancers, it can certainly cause them to be more aggressive. And we are all predisposed to developing cancers. I mean, cancer incidence is on the rise in us, and it's just getting younger and younger. And because the last thing we want to do is make it even more aggressive. So something that may be indolent, if you are then taking HGH or some of these other accelerants, can just make it much more aggressive and could potentially end someone's life.
It's interesting you say that we're trying to do the same thing with all of these. HGH, hormone replacement therapy, testosterone. We're trying to reduce inflammation. Inflammation's the enemy of youthfulness, I guess. I know that anecdotally because I try to like know how to be healthy and more vain, you know, so I know that like inflammation is the thing. So even diet wise, like I'm the TB12 method, Tom Brady, like let's reduce inflammation. Is that my goal? Is that what I need to be doing, Dr. Sapphire? Just reducing inflammation any way possible? Not any way possible. The most natural way possible.
Yeah, well, of course it is. The TB12 diet that Tom Brady follows, I mean, that's intense. And unless you're a mega billionaire, mega millionaire like he is, it's hard to do if you don't have a personal chef making you all of these organic meals that I think like 70% plant-based or 80% plant-based, 20% animal product. I mean, it's really difficult to follow. But ultimately, our goal to not only decrease fatigue, but if we want to decrease chronic illness in general, including autoimmune diseases and cancers, it's really just lowering that systemic inflammation. We as a society, we are unfortunately introduced to way too many things right now that just has our bodies going crazy. This is why we have more cancer. This is why we have more autoimmune diseases. Think of all the preservatives and the hormones and other things that are in all of the foods that and drinks that we consume right now. I mean, really, we're doing it to ourselves. So I personally love turmeric and ginger, and I add that to just about everything, whether it's my tea, whether it's my salad, anything naturally to decrease inflammation. I think there are some great medications out there for people who are really struggling. But ultimately, I think the majority of people who are taking a lot of these medications don't need it. And really, they can just focus on lifestyle changes, and that would do the trick.
All right, two more. Ozempic. Now, here's the thing. Just like that doctor said, 90% of guys on South Beach are on HGH. I do walk around wondering, and I don't care. I don't think I care. Well, that's the point. Should I care? Like, I don't know how many people are on Ozempic now, male and female. It feels like 50%, Dr. Sapphire. And because people are losing weight everywhere I look, and I don't think everybody's getting more disciplined. So, I mean, I had a friend who's a doctor who said, hey, look, Ozempic's been around a long time. They've been doing it for a couple of decades for diabetes. It's pretty well tested on its safety. That was a friend who's a doctor. But then there's just like this little, intuition inside going, I don't know. Miracle drugs tend not to be miracles.
So I'm going to respectfully disagree with your friend. GLP-1 agonists, like, let's be clear, that's what we're talking about. It's a big umbrella of medications, not just Ozempic. Ozempic is the lower dose version that was developed to treat diabetes. The Wegovy and the other medications that people are actually taking for weight loss is a much higher dose, which there is no long-term data on whatsoever. We don't also have a lot of long-term data on the rapid weight loss of not just your fat, but what's the other thing you see of people who are on these medications? Rapid muscle loss as well. What we do know from these medications are people on them in rat studies and other rodent studies, you have increased metabolic, some disorders, as well as thyroid cancers. What else can happen? Well, people are reporting hair loss and pancreatitis and some other issues that are not so insignificant. So while I do see a lot of people are probably on this, and again, we have an obesity problem here in the United States. I'm all for people losing weight, but again, we're kind of doing it the American way. We're like, just give me the shot. I can't do it. I can't get to the gym. I'm too busy. I just want the shot. I think that these medications really should be reserved for people who have obesity, who have metabolic or medical conditions that are putting them at increased risk, that they will certainly benefit from these medications. But people who are just using it for routine weight loss that are not necessarily at an increased risk for any of these health problems, I'm not sure that the risks outweigh potential benefits there.
Yeah, that's the point. I guess we just don't
backwards.
Know.
We don't know. It feels like a big experiment. We don't know all of the risks yet.
Right.
And so unless there's a clear benefit for someone and not just for vanity to lose a couple of pounds, I would be very hesitant to recommend it.
Vanity, though, super powerful vanity. Last one, the conversation I don't want to have with you, even though I'm despite my introduction today, I'm a self-styled expert. You should know this about me if you don't. I this sounds like I'm patting myself on my back, but Pete would describe me as thoughtful. I think, I read a lot, and I, whatever it is I arrive at, you know, I've put something into it usually, even what I watch on TV. But that doesn't mean I'm exempt from addiction. So if I'm being authentic, and I want to be, I'm super addicted to nicotine. And I know this about myself and my life. I don't think I'll ever be an alcoholic. I do not have an addictive personality to depressants. The stimulant that is nicotine is the most addictive thing I've ever encountered in my life. I haven't encountered everything. And I think it's only become more aware to me, Dr. Sapphire, in the past year. Like, I chewed tobacco when I was a kid, like a lot of kids in Texas. And then, you know, it morphed into different products throughout. And then I quit pretty well in my 30s. You know, now I'm in my 40s and they bring in Zyn, and Zyn, the nicotine pouch with no tobacco, so no link to cancer, because tobacco is what causes cancer. So, you know, and then I read all the studies. Well, nicotine actually isn't that bad for you. It's not to say it's got no problems, like increased rate of high blood pressure, maybe. But it's 100% addictive, at least for me. I have tried everything. Like, I'm going to limit it today. I'm going to wait till this time today. And every day is a failure for me. And I hate it. I hate it. I hate failing. Because I wake up and I say, less today, less. I just need to say cold turkey because I've learned that about myself. It's the only thing that works. But I do want to ask you this. Do you disagree with my premise of what I've read that for right now, nicotine doesn't seem like that bad of a drug to be addicted to in terms of its health detriments?
Well, first of all, you're not alone in your nicotine addiction. It is wildly known as one of the most addictive chemicals possible. It's one of the hardest habits to break. What I find interesting, though, Will, is
and
that...
on that real quick, Dr. Sapphire, like Ozempic conversation, this one's not being had. Not every friend of mine, but a high percentage friend of mine, ranging from 20s to 50s, dudes, Zyn. Like, it's a big deal. It's out there. A lot of people are doing Zyn.
And Zyn are just the little packets, right? It's not you're inhaling it or anything of the sort.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Forgive my ignorance.
Yeah, it's right here. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just a little pouch you put in your mouth.
So first of all, you're right in the fact that when we're talking about all the addictive substances, there are far worse things. Yeah, nicotine is linked to high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, maybe some heart arrhythmias. However, it's also linked to improved cognition. and especially in patients with certain dementias and Parkinsonism, and it does give you that energy boost. And so when we're talking about as we age, all of a sudden we have decreased energy and people are looking for ways to boost their energy, whether they're taking testosterone, whether they're lowering their inflammation with GLP-1 agonists, you're taking Zyn. It's kind of all the same thing in that sense to me, because we're all kind of looking for something just to feel a little bit better. So you're taking it to feel a little bit better, and that is just what it is. You've already read upon the risks of it, and I'm assuming that you're monitoring your blood pressure and you see your primary care doctor, and I happen to know that you live a relatively healthy life. No. A little bit. No. See?
None of those things.
Trying to give you the benefit of the doubt here. If you don't have any of the cardiovascular disease risk factors and stuff, I'm not going to come down hard on you. Now, when one of our friends was constantly vaping, I had a problem with that. And I would say something about that because I felt very strongly about it. I would say something strongly because I'm like, this is not good. Your lungs have a very thin lining. There's going to be damage and you got to stop. When you're just talking about pure nicotine, while I don't recommend anybody start it, there are far worse things. And I do just truly think that as you're getting older and entering your menopause, this is probably what you're taking to help with some of your menopause symptoms.
I don't think it's helping with my sleep. And no, I will say our friend has quit vaping. And you're right. Like vaping also intuitively, that doesn't look good for your lungs. But maybe Zyn's not so bad. But I still want to quit. I don't like being out of control. That's the main thing.
Yeah, well,
I do not like being not being in charge of this. Yeah.
You are addicted to it. And
I guess it gives me a window. It gives me a window into what I guess these people are addicted to real things, you know, opioids or whatever. It's like, it's weird. Like you say, like, I do it to enjoy it. No, I don't. I don't enjoy it. I enjoy one of the day, the first one. After that, it's just because my body is saying, let's go. It's time. You know, it's not fun. All right. But this conversation has been fun. The book, Love Mom, Inspiring Stories Celebrating Motherhood. It's on sale at foxnewsbooks.com. It's by Dr. Nicole Sapphire. It's a great conversation. It's a great book. And I really appreciate you being on The Will Cain Show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. See you next time, Dr. Sapphire. Real quick, before we take a break, I want to bring in the fellas, if we can, Two-A-Days Dan, Tinfoil Pat, Young Establishment James. I'm going to make you mad real quick. So on the names of sports teams, Two-A-Days Dan, do you know how your beloved New York Rangers got their name?
Wow, that's really calling me out. I actually don't know that. Do you know the answer?
There you go. Well, I always wondered it without ever being so curious as to look it up. Mm. Like, I'm like, Texas Rangers makes sense.
Right.
I don't know if that history makes its way to New York, but like the Texas Rangers, they're one of my heroes. I mean, like, I want to write books on the Texas Rangers. Those guys, the men who tamed the West. But why did it make sense for New York Rangers? And I was like, is it Park Rangers? Like, you know, is it? I really thought that's probably what it was. It was some type of park ranger type situation. I don't have the story down pat, Two-A-Days, but it goes like this. One of the first, like, bigwigs in the New York hockey team's front office was named Tex, or his nickname was Tex.
I Googled it.
And so when they changed the name, they're like, you kind of, I think, anecdotally called them Texas Rangers. And they just adopted it and said, we'll make them the New York Rangers. So it's not unique to New York. It's not regional. It's just a piggyback on Texas. So New York is just living in the wake, right in the wake of Texas.
Why you got to kill me like that right in the middle of the playoffs? They're playing so well, and you just got to knock me down a peg. I get it, but geez.
Yeah, well, Stars and Mavs are losing, so I got to drag you down with me. All right, while the crew is here, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to play Can a Zoomer Solve This Quiz? Can Young Establishment James do okay? Let's say, can he bat 750 on a pop culture quiz that just slightly predates Gen Z? Next on The Will Cain Show. All right, can a Gen Zer, a Zoomer, pass this pop culture quiz? It's The Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, and the Fox News Facebook page. Hit subscribe right during the commercial break. Let's bring in the Walisha. Two Days was trying to tell me, you know, I used to dip and gin, and Zen just doesn't hit for me. Just doesn't do anything. I said, bull. Yeah, that is not, I have friends that are smokers, lifelong Copenhagen users. No one has said what you just said.
Well, I've had, like, back in the day in my 20s, I've had a dart or two, you know, drinking some beers with friends, you know, and that's fun when you're having a beer. I just don't know. Zen, I've tried dip back in the day playing golf and stuff like that. Zen, maybe I just don't have, I didn't know there's different levels of it. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that. Yeah. So maybe I had a really low dose.
Three and six.
Okay.
Three and six. I'm going to tell you a quick story. So one of my best friends for my entire life, he's a big, you know, he's, I don't know, 330. We're going to put the over-under at 330. And, you know, played offensive line at the University of Texas and in the NFL. And the main thing that he probably mastered was how to have a good time. And so he has always been a good time. And, you know, and nothing, he does nothing. When it's time to have a good time, he does nothing a little. He does everything a lot. Mm-hmm. And that included, you know, throwing back some darts, you know, when you're having some drinks. And when I say some, you know, that meant like a pack in a night, you know, or whatever.
Wow.
So he said he heard me talking about Zen, and he was dragging ass one day driving around, and he's like, I'm going to go into the gas station. I need a little pick-me-up. So he goes to buy a 10 of Zen, and the guy's like, you want the 3 or the 6? And he's like, I mean, I've smoked, but give me the 6. Like, it's never going to be the guy that says, give me the 3.
Right.
So he got back in his car. He said he put it in. He goes, effed me up, man. I mean, I was cold, but I was sweating. He said I had the string spits. I had to pull over. It's apparently a cigarette is 1 milligram of nicotine absorption. Hmm. I don't know what the absorption rate of this is, but this is a 6, you know,
it's
so
slower, but
that's what
I'll have to,
I don't believe you Two Days.
I'll have to try it and get back to you. I'll try it again. I only tried it once. So maybe this weekend I'll try one watching the Rangers or something.
Okay. All right, here we are. The Gen Z quiz. Can a Zoomer answer these questions about pop culture? Young Establishment James is our resident Zoomer. How old are you, James?
25.
25 years old, a whole life ahead of him, a whole series of decades of disappointment yet to come. And we're going to find out what does he actually know? What does somebody this age actually know? When it's your kid, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, he probably doesn't know about, I don't know, Willie Nelson. But what about a Gen Zer? By the way, do you know who Willie Nelson is,
yeah.
James?
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Country singer.
Okay. Good.
Name one Willie Nelson song.
Oh gosh, tip of the tongue.
It's name one song.
Okay, I know what it goes like. I mean, I'm not gonna sing. So
walk with me, buddy.
Eminem referenced him in 8 Mile. Said this ain't Willie Nelson music.
Have you ever heard of Whiskey River?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Give me a little Whiskey River if you've heard it.
I don't know.
I just want to preface, I'm not much of a pop culture guy before we take this quiz. I threw a couple
you that, certainly know mamas don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
Certainly.
No, that was a no too. So you've just heard of Willie Nelson. Okay, here we go. Gen Z quiz. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 questions. Before we start, Two Days and Tinfoil over under. James gets 3.
Yes, 3 is my sweet spot.
I think he gets 2.
Here we go. Question number 1, Young Establishment James. In the 90s, this comedian taught the world that, quote, you might be a redneck. Who is he?
Jeff Foxworthy.
Wow.
We used to have
boom,
a little...
1 for 1.
Wow.
I do think that's the easiest one.
Shit.
All right. This is in your world, Young Establishment James. This is in your rhino world. In 1976, Gerald Ford ran on the campaign slogan of WIN, W-I-N. What does W-I-N stand for?
Whiskey inflation, not today. I have no idea.
So close.
I could tell you he almost beat Reagan.
So close.
Or Reagan almost beat him. What was it?
I would not have gotten this. So to be fair to James, I wouldn't have gotten this. And I doubt the 2-a-days or tinfoil would have gotten it.
Well, it was on in an episode of that 70s show. So just FYI, it was a pop culture reference.
Well, that 70s show is now dated for James. That's a little old for James. Mm-hmm. It stands for Whip Inflation Now, James.
Okay.
You had the word inflation in there. You're almost there. All right, one for two. In 1993, this singer of the hit song 1999 changed his name to the love symbol and became known as the artist formerly known as his old name. Who is this artist?
Is that Boys to Men?
No. No.
James, I'm going to read this question one more time. James, I'm going to read this question
LL
one more time.
Cool J?
Because I don't think... James, stop. I think next to Jeff Foxworthy, this is the easiest one, and you should get this. I'm going to read it for you one more time. In 1993, the singer of the song 1999 changed his name to the love symbol and became known as the artist formerly known as his old name. Who is this artist?
Prince.
You got it when I went 1999?
Yeah.
R.I.P.
In the lyric?
It took a little nudge.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you that. Two for three.
Two and a third.
Next question. Not Heathcliff. This other famous orange cat lived with his owner John and roommate dog Odie. What is his name?
Wow, I'm picturing him right now. A dog?
It's a cat.
Cat. Oh, gosh. I know it. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Orange cat.
Yeah, no, I know exactly who you're talking about. They did a rerun of his show. He was like this pudgy little orange thing that was kind of a troublemaker, a little rascal. Is it something with a G? Geronimo? Or
I need to look at the answers.
Oh. I know exactly.
You don't know it, 2-a-days?
I don't. Wait.
It's not Geronimo. Is it Geronimo?
In every car window in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Give a little hint because it's there. I'll take half credit.
No, you are there, but I'm not. You're so close that I don't want any hint like 1999 is going to push you over the edge and get it.
It's close to Geronimo.
I hope the audience in the comment section is blowing this up right now. I'm sure they all know the answer. It is Garfield.
Garfield. Oh,
yeah. There's. I'm trying to
two
I'm,
for four.
I'm trying to block the chat from him so he doesn't see the answers from the
Geronimo.
from the live chat.
In the audience.
Yeah.
All right. Two for four, Young Establishment James. You need one more to beat the over under of two. You need to get these last two to get over the three over under. Here we go. You're never going to get this. In 1970, the folk rock group Crosby, Stills, and Nash added a fourth member to their group. What was his name?
John Denver. I don't know.
He's very famous. He's a very famous folk singer.
Extremely.
Maybe the most famous folk singer.
Yeah. Played a harmonica. Long hair.
Super liberal.
Mm-hmm. Just recently.
Neil Young.
Boom.
Wow.
Yeah. We got to get quick giving him hits. Neil Young pulled his music off of Spotify because Joe Rogan was right about COVID. Oh, by the way, Neil Young, now back on Spotify. It's a hell of a protest from the protest singer himself, Neil Young. All right, finally, last question. You're sitting at three, okay? So you got to get this to beat the over-under. You already surpassed, who was it that said two?
I was wrong.
2-a-days said two. Tinfoil and I are sitting at three, so you got to get this to beat us, James. Last question. In the 1980s, Tipper Gore and her group, the Parent Music Resource Center, influenced the music industry to add this to new controversial albums. What was it?
the explicit or age rating on the top left.
Are we going to give that to him?
The rating system, PG, R, E, no E,
that's
explicit.
That's more in gaming.
He's getting further away.
That's in gaming.
All right, I'll stop explaining myself.
Yeah.
So what was your first answer?
Yeah, it'd be movies, I think, then gaming. Now I see it on TV series all the time. I'm watching Shogun, and it's rated mature. But this, in the music industry, they haven't rated it on a scale like this. It just comes with this warning. One more.
Explicit.
I'm going to have to say that's a no. It's parental advisory, explicit lyrics.
I think I was in the ballpark for all six.
Tohee got 3 of 6.
Well, to be fair,
I'm going
to
give you credit. You were in the ballpark.
There's no air balls. Hit the rim.
You rimmed them. You rimmed them out. No air balls. Most impressively, including the word inflation in win. All right, there we go. Not bad for the Zoomer, for the Gen Zer here on the Will Cain Show. Maybe you did as well, or maybe you did better. When you comment and you get it, let me know, though, what generation you are. Z, Millennial, X, Boomer. So I want to know if it was really a stretch according to your generation. All right, that's going to do it for us today here on the Will Cain Show. Hit subscribe so you can join the community, hang out with us on YouTube or on Facebook or on Spotify or on Apple. Will Cain Show. We'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcast and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.